If she ever asked me to, I'd do it all again. One day love just hits you with a flash, leaves you staring blindly like some listening to PTO Junction on CILU Radio 102.7 FM in Thunder Bay, all around the world at luradio.ca. If you're listening on a weekday, that is the show. If you're listening on a Sunday night, we've got another half hour for you.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you've traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
Good morning. You are listening to CILU 102.7 FM. I'm Josh O'Hare with It's Pretty Trivial. Got a pretty good episode for you today. It was one that was suggested by someone. Before we get into that, I'd like to remind everyone to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Trivial It. And don't be afraid to look it up. And hopefully by the end of next week, I'll have uploaded all of the videos, or not the videos, at least the shows to hopefully a podcast site, and definitely I'll try and upload them to YouTube, but it takes a little bit of time to do that, so stay tuned for that. Today's episode was one that was suggested by my grandmother, actually. She mentioned it to me, and I said that's a pretty good idea, and she's been kind of waiting for it for a while. But this is going to be a multi-part episode in a sense. Because the way I'm going to structure this, it's going to be multiple different lists of the same thing. Today we're going to be talking about the 7 wonders of the ancient world. Not the modern world, not the industrial world, not the 7 natural wonders of the world, the 7 ancient wonders of the world. Now, this is not the same as the modern wonders. So if you think you know the modern wonders, or the 7 new wonders of the world, you may not know this one. That's why I said I might do a multi-part episode on this, as there's multiple things we can talk about regarding the wonders of the world. So without further ado, let's get right into it. Now, these wonders of the world, the ancient world, date back much further than many people would think. Now, I am going to ask a question about when did they first become a thing and who wrote them. Here's a hint. It was before the birth of Jesus Christ. So it was BC. Turns out that one of the ancient Greek writers wrote a list of 7 wonders. And it was even debated back then which deserved to be included on that list. The original list comes from a writer called Philo of Byzantium, who wrote in 225 BC on the 7 wonders. Ultimately, human hands came together and destroyed all but one of the wonders. But they still say they're amazing works of art, and they've got a lot of knowledge about these structures, at least. So you can still look them up online and see what they would have looked like. And most of them partially exist. All of them continue to be remarkable creativity, especially back when they were built. A lot of these were also the seven wonders. The number seven was significant in Greece. And this is why there are seven wonders. Now, why is that the case? Why are there only seven wonders? Well, it's because the Greeks believed it represented perfection and plenty. And it was the number of the five planets known anciently, plus the sun and moon. Many similar lists have been made. So it was because the number seven was so significant to them. Now, before we get into a deep dive on each of the separate wonders of the world, I'd like to ask, what are the seven ancient wonders of the world? Well, the seven go the Great Pyramid of Giza in Egypt, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, the Statue of Zeus at Olympia, the Temple of Artemis at Ephesus, the Mausoleum at Halicarnassus, and the Colossus of Rhodes, as well as the Lighthouse of Alexandria. These were the wonders back when this list was first compiled. And as you can tell, many people probably have not heard about most of these things. That is because the only surviving one is, of course, the Great Pyramids of Giza. So, let's first get into the Great Pyramid of Giza. Now, where is this pyramid located? And in what country is it located? The Great Pyramid, located at Giza on the west bank of the Nile River north of Cairo in Egypt, is the only one that survived to the present day. It's part of the group of three pyramids, Khufu, Cheops, Khafre, Sephren, and Menkaure, Mycerimus, that were built between 2700 BC and 2500 BC as royal tombs. The largest and most impressive is Khufu, known as the Great Pyramid. It covers 13 acres and is believed to contain more than 2 million stone blocks that weigh from 2 to 30 tons each. For more than 4,000 years, Khufu reigned as what in the world? Turns out it reigned as the tallest structure, the tallest building on Earth. In fact, it took modern man until the 19th century to build a taller structure. Amazingly, the nearly symmetrical pyramids were built without the aid of any modern tools or equipment. So how did they build these pyramids? Scientists believe that they used log rollers and sledges to move the stones into place. The sloped walls, which were intended to mimic the rays of Ra, the sun god, originally built as steps and then filled in with limestone. The interior of the pyramid includes narrow corridors and hidden chambers in an unsuccessful attempt to foil grave robbers. Although modern archaeologists have found some great treasures among the ruins, they believe most of what the pyramids once contained was looted within 250 years of their completion. I will be honest, a lot of this I am taking straight off of the internet, off of history.com, so I want to thank them for all this material I'm getting. Those are the Pyramids of Giza. Now, the Pyramids of Giza is something most people learn about at a very young age. I remember in school when I first learned about them. They're an amazing feat of almost every human accomplishment there is. It's amazing that many years ago, they managed to build such massive structures that stood as tall as structures for over 4,000 years. It's pretty interesting. The next structure we're going to take a look at is one that does not exist anymore. but actually inspired another famous statue. So, the one we're going to look at next is the Colossus of Rhodes. And what did it inspire? It turns out that they inspired the Statue of Liberty. It was an enormous bronze sculpture of the sun god Helios, built by the Rhodians over 12 years in the 3rd century BC. The city was a target of Macedonian siege early in the 4th century BC, and, according to legend, the Rhodians sold the tools and equipment left behind by the Macedonians to pay for the Colossus. Designed by the sculptor Cheres, the statue was, at 100 feet, the tallest of the ancient world. It was completed around 280 BC. How long did it stand for? And how was it destroyed? Apparently it stood for over 60 years until it was toppled by an earthquake. It was never rebuilt. Hundreds of years later, Arabs invaded Rhodes and sold the remains of the statue as scrap metal. Because of this, archaeologists do not know much about the exact location of the statue or what it looked like. Most believe that it depicted the sun god standing naked while he lifted a torch in one hand and held a spear in the other. It was once believed that the statue stood with one leg on each harbor, but most agree that, the legs were most likely built close together to support the immense weight. That apparently helped inspire the Statue of Liberty in the U.S. Sad to think that this beautiful tall statue was toppled by an earthquake and never rebuilt. Imagine if it was still standing today, how cool that would be. Just such an amazing feat. The next one we're going to look at is going to be the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. Now, before we get into that, I just want to mention that this first little bit, we're just going to take a quick look at these, and then I might go a little deeper into depth in the second part of this episode on all of these specifically, or I may do another list and build up until the great new Seven Wonders of the World. So the next one we're going to talk about are the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. According to ancient Greek poets, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon were built near what river in modern-day Iraq? Turns out they built it near the Euphrates River, and it was built by the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar II around 600 BC. They are said to have been planted as high as 75 feet in the air on a huge square brick terrace and was laid out in steps like a theater. The king allegedly built the towering gardens to ease his lover Amidus' homesickness for the natural beauty of her home in Media, the northwestern part of modern-day Iran. Later writers would describe how people would walk underneath the beautiful gardens, which rested on tall stone columns. Modern-day scientists have deduced that for the gardens to survive, they would have had to be irrigated by using a system consisting of a pump, water wheel, and cisterns to carry water from the Euphrates many feet into the air. Though there are multiple accounts of the gardens in both Greek and Roman literature, none of them are firsthand, and no mention of the gardens has been found in Babylonian cuneiform inscriptions. As a result, most scholars believe that the existence of the gardens was part of an inspired and widely believed but still fictional tale. Basically, it's saying that they don't think it existed and it was just kind of a thing of legends. But if you look up a picture of it, it is a really beautiful structure. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is something that would definitely be, you know, a super famous thing if built nowadays would be beautiful. But it's really interesting to think that even back then, they had hoaxes on that scale. We're going to take a quick musical break, and when we come back, we're going to continue with our list. I'm going to explain what the song is, and then we're going to listen to it. So, be back with you in just a second with the song. The song we're about to listen to was released in 2001. This song was written by a certain band. And basically, they were inspired by an exhibition of ancient Egyptian underworld art. And while the band was recording it in Copenhagen, and there were ideas of cyclic time in Buddhism and was discussed by Stephen Hawking. This song is an interesting song, and it was considered one of the band's best work. It was by Radiohead. What is the song? It is Pyramid Song here on CILU 102.7 FM.
Future.
Welcome back. You're listening to CILU 102.7 FM. That was Radiohead with the Pyramid Song. Now that we're back, I'd like to cover some more of the ancient wonders of the world. We left off talking about the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. Next, we're going to talk about another statue. This is the statue of Zeus at Olympia. Now, this famed statue of Zeus, the king of the gods in Greek mythology, was crafted by an Athenian sculptor, Phidias, and completed and placed in the temple of Zeus at Olympia, the site of the ancient Olympics, around the mid-5th century BC. This statue depicted the god of thunder, how? Depicted the god of thunder seated, bare-chested, at a wooden throne. Holding up the throne's armrests were two carved sphinxes, mythical creatures with the head and chest of a woman and the body of a lion and wings of a bird. The statue of Zeus was richly decorated with gold and ivory, and at 40 feet was so tall that its head nearly touched the top of the temple. According to legend, the sculptor Phidias asked Zeus for a sign of his approval after finishing the statue. Soon after, the temple was struck by lightning. The Zeus statue graced the temple at Olympia for more than 8 centuries before Christian priests persuaded the Roman emperor to close the temple in the 4th century AD. At this time, the statue was moved to a temple in Constantinople, what was believed to be destroyed in a fire in the year 462. Another beautiful statue destroyed, this time by fire. It seems that natural disasters seem to have destroyed a lot of these modern marvels. The next we're going to talk about is the Temple of Artemis at Ephesus. There was actually more than one Temple of Artemis. A series of altars and temples were destroyed and then restored on the same site in Ephesus, a Greek port city on the west coast of modern-day Turkey. The most fabulous of these structures were two marble temples built around which years? The years were 550 BC and 350 BC, respectively. Apart from Olympus, the sun never looked on anything so grand. The writer Antipater of Sidon wrote of the Temple of Artemis at Ephesus. It was originally designed by the Cretan architect Chrysophron and his son Metagenes, and decorated by some of the most celebrated artists of the ancient world. The building burned on July 21st, 356 BC. According to legend, the same night that Alexander the Great was born. It was torched by a Greek citizen named Herostratus, who claimed he burned the marvel so that the name would be known to history. He was put to death, and the government declared it illegal to utter his name. About 6 years later, the building of the new Temple of Artemis was begun. The new building was surrounded by steps that led to more than a 400-foot-long terrace. Inside, there was an 127 60-foot marble columns and a statue of Artemis, the Greek goddess of what? The Greek goddess of the hunt. Archaeologists disagree as to whether the building had an open-air ceiling or if it was topped with wood tiles. It was largely destroyed by the Ostrogoths in AD 262, and it was not until the 1860s that archaeologists dug up the first of the ruins of the temple's columns at the bottom of the Caister River. The next one that we're going to talk about is the mausoleum at Halicarnassus, located in is now southeastern Turkey. It was a tomb built by the by Artemisia for her husband, Mausolus, the king of Carnia in Asia Minor, after his death in 353 BC. Mausolus was also Artemisia's brother, and, according to legend, she was so grief-stricken at his passing that she mixed his ashes with water and drank them, in addition to ordering the mausoleum's construction. The massive mausoleum was made entirely of white marble, and is thought to have been about 135 feet tall. It had a complicated design consisting of three rectangular layers, and may have been an attempt to reconcile Lycian, Greek and Egyptian architectural styles. First layer was a 60-foot base of steps, followed by a middle layer of 36 Ionic columns, and a stepped pyramid-shaped roof. The very top of the roof lay the tomb, decorated by the work of four sculptors and a 20-foot marble rendition of a four-horse chariot. It was largely destroyed by another natural disaster in the 13th century. What was this natural disaster? Turns out it was an earthquake in the 13th century. Its remains were later used for the fortification of a castle. In 1846, pieces of one of the mausoleum's friezes were extracted from the castle and now reside, along with other relics from the Halicarnassus site, in London's British Museum. So, there's only one more to cover of these structures before we take a quick break. This one is another very famous one, named after probably one of the most famous people in the ancient world. This lighthouse is named after this important person. What is it? It's the Lighthouse of Alexandria. Was located on this small island called Pharos, near the city of Alexandria. Designed by Greek architect Sostratos and completed around 270 BC, during the reign of Ptolemy II, the lighthouse helped to guide Nile River ships in and out of the city's busy harbor. They have found ancient coins on where the lighthouse was depicted, and from deduce that the structure had three tiers, a square level at the bottom, an octagonal level in the middle, and a cylindrical top. Above that stood a 16-foot statue, most likely of Ptolemy II or Alexander the Great, for whom the city was named. Although estimates of the lighthouse's height have ranged from 200 to 600 feet, most modern scholars believe it was about 380. It was gradually destroyed during a series of, again, earthquakes, from 956 to 1323. Some of its remains have since been discovered at the bottom of the Nile River. Now, that is it for this half of the show. When we come back, we might cover another topic relating to a different list of the seven wonders of the world. That was the ancient marvels. Now let's look at a different list before, in another episode, we get to the finale of the new ones, the new seven wonders of the world. So stay tuned here on CILU 102.7 FM.
CILU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following speakers for their continuous support.
Lakehead Unitarian Fellowship, an inclusive spiritual community promoting a compassionate, just, and sustainable world. Find them online at luf.ca, on Facebook, or at 129 South Algoma, Sundays at 10:30 a.m. The Live from the Rock Folk Festival, bringing the spirit of folk and folk music to Red Rock every August. Keep up to date with upcoming happenings and buy tickets online at livefromtherockfolkfestival.com. The Outpost, Lakehead University's pub, full-service restaurant, and live music venue. Find them on Facebook to stay up to date on all the happenings during the school year, like Tanker Tuesdays and Pub Night Thursdays.
Welcome back to CILU 102.7 FM. I'm Joshua with It's Pretty Trivial. Welcome to the second half of our show. If you're tuning in the first half, thank you. If you're just tuning in now, thanks for tuning in. Today, we're talking about Wonders of the World, and not just the new Wonders of the World list. This is going to be what leads up to that. So, what we started with in the first half was we talked about the seven wonders of the ancient world. Next, I think we're going to talk about the seven wonders of the world in another sense. There is many different types of wonders of the world. There's the new modern wonders of the world, the seven wonders of the world, seven wonders of the modern world, the natural world, the industrial world. I think the next one we're going to cover in this episode today, though, is going to be the seven wonders of the natural world. Because this is quite a bit easier. This is it's an easy topic to talk about, and it's maybe a little bit more interesting than just in an industrial world or the modern world. So, what are the natural wonders of the world, you may ask? Well, they're basically Earth's wonders of the world. And these have some pretty beautiful skylines and views, and they're very, very pretty. They involve some really, really cool places and cool modern just effects that just look super cool. The first one we're going to talk about is probably one of the most famous wonders of the natural world that's out there. It's probably one of the most famous mountains, and it's part of the Himalayan mountain range. It borders between Nepal and Chinese-owned Tibet, and is protected by Sagarmatha National Park in the Himalayas. What is it? Turns out it's Mount Everest, and it's renowned as being the highest spot on Earth. At how many meters above sea level? It's at 8,848 meters above sea level. It's over 8 kilometers above sea level. Really, really high. Its original name in Tibetan is Chomolungma, Goddess Mother of Snow. And in Nepalese, it's Sagarmatha. The mountain received an English name in 1865 because Nepal and Tibet were closed to foreigners at the time. So the Royal Geographical Survey did not know its local names. You can get a helicopter tour to get as close to the peak as possible without actually climbing the beast, and this is what is recommended. Climbing Everest is not something that is attempted lightly. It takes 12 days to trek from the base camp, and it costs around $32,000 to $45,000 USD. And this comes from a travel website. It's no wonder that this thing is a marvel. It's just over 5 kilometers to base camp. And Chinese tour groups advise it takes about 5 days to apply for a visa and permits to enter Tibet and climb the mountain once you were already in China. Now, did you know that while Mount Everest is the highest spot on Earth, it's not actually the tallest mountain? Where does that distinction belong to? Turns out it belongs to Mount McKinley in Alaska, which is the tallest mountain when measured from above sea level. The tallest mountain in the world whose base is mostly underwater is Mount Kea Volcano in Hawaii, which extends 4.2 kilometers in the air and around 6 kilometers in the sea. So even though our favorite mountain, Mount Everest, may be the tallest spot on Earth, it is not the tallest mountain. It's an interesting thing to think about, just by how things are defined. it's kind of cool to see how all of this works. The next on this list is the harbor of Rio de Janeiro. Located in Brazil, the harbor is surrounded by unique granite mountains that were formed by erosion of the Atlantic Ocean. It is well known as Guanabara Bay and is a source of the famous image of the white stone statue of Christ the Redeemer atop Corcovado Mountain, facing the sea with its arms outstretched. It's the largest bay in the world, based on the volume of water. This is a really beautiful harbor, and has probably one of the most famous statues, which may be covered on another list. Now, what does Rio de Janeiro mean? It actually means River of January in Portuguese, and is the second largest city in Brazil. There's no river there, but the Portuguese explorer Gaspar de Lemos thought that Guanabara Bay was part of the Tejo River when he arrived there in January 1501. Now, this next one is an underwater marvel that is very well known to most people and is being threatened by many a things, including global warming. This is a beautiful, beautiful wonder. It's the home of Nemo, and it's right on our doorstep. Our doorsteps. No, not far from us, it's quite far, but for a lot of people, it's not that far. I believe it's right near Australia. It's not just one big, long, connected reef. It's made up of more than 2,900 individual reefs constructed by billions of minuscule coral polyps, which are living organisms. I've already given a hint. It's a reef. It stretches over 2,600 kilometers. And includes more than 900 islands. What are we talking about? Well, we are talking about the Great Barrier Reef. This reef is massive, and it has some of the famous images of colorful ocean floors with Nemo and all the Finding Nemo characters. It is listed as a World Heritage Area and is protected by the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park, a national park, I believe in Australia. Now, while another interesting fact, while people often claim wrongly that you can see the Great Wall of China from space, did you know that it's a fact that some astronauts and satellites have taken photos of the Great Barrier Reef from space? That's really interesting to me. You can't see the Great Wall of China, but you can see the Great Barrier Reef from a satellite. The next one we're going to talk about is a falls. And it's not what you may, it's not Niagara Falls. This falls is on the Zambezi River and crosses the border of Zambia and Zimbabwe. It plunges 108 meters down in a stunning waterfall that is 1.7 kilometers wide. The falls are also called Mosi Oa Tunya, meaning smoke that thunders, in the Kalolo Lozi tribe's dialect. National parks in both Zambia and Zimbabwe protect this landmark. What is this wonder? Turns out it's Victoria Falls. When Zambia gained independence in 1964, and the rest of its geographic names were being changed back to African names, only Victoria Falls and Livingstone kept their names because of the deep respect the Zambian people had for their Scottish missionary, David Livingstone. These falls are beautiful. And it says that the trails on the Zimbabwe side offer an 80% view of the falls, while 25% view from the Zambian side. Did you know that it's neither the highest nor the widest waterfall on the planet, but is the longest single sheet of flowing water when you consider both its height and width? The next one we're going to look at is one place I've never actually heard of. It's a volcano, or a once active cinder cone volcano in Mexico, in Michoacán. Was chosen as one of the seven natural wonders because it's the only volcano whose birth in 1943 was witnessed and documented by humans. It quickly grew to 3/4 of its current size within the first year, and now is estimated to be around 3 kilometers high. It erupted for 19 years solid before going silent in 1952, hopefully never to be heard of again. What is this volcano's name? It's the Paricutin volcano. This volcano has, one way to visit this volcano is by taking a 15 kilometer round trip hike to the top of the volcano. It's not easy, so other popular option is to visit it on horseback. Both take you past lava fields, buried village homes, and a church near the summit of the volcano. Did you know that the access to it is usually via Anaguan, the town that survived the volcano's eruptions? They survived. Why? They survived because they lived on a mountain rather than living in the valley where the volcano sprang out of the ground. The next one we're about to cover is probably one of the most famous natural features on planet Earth, apart from maybe Mount Everest. This famous gorge is located in Arizona and can be explored on foot with a day hike or overnight camping hike. For those that have trouble moving, you can explore it on the back of a mule. And it also has an observation deck that's glass. You can even experience it with a whitewater rafting trip with kayakers. There's many ways to visit it. This famous gorge in Arizona is what? Turns out it's the Grand Canyon. How deep and how long is it? At 1.8 kilometers deep and 446 kilometers long, it's not the steepest nor the longest canyon in the world. It was chosen as a natural wonder for its overall size, scale, and beautiful colored landscape. Now, the last of the natural wonders we are going to look at is not in any specific location, but those of us living here in Thunder Bay might have experienced it before. Now, this one is a nightly occurring, naturally occurring lights in the sky that just begs people to look at them. There are glowing lines of vivid color along horizons or waves across the sky. There's been legends created around the cause of these lights in the heavens since the days of ancient Greece, Norse mythology, and medieval England. Science, as we understand it today, is that the effect is caused by charged cosmic particles appearing in different colored lights as they enter Earth's atmosphere. What is it called in the northern atmosphere? It's known as the polar auroras, or the northern lights, or the aurora borealis. Now, in the southern hemisphere, what is it called? The southern aurora, it occurs in the southern hemisphere, is less well known, but it's also called the aurora australis. And I believe the australis is taken from Australia. Those are the seven wonders of the natural world. We're going to take a quick musical break, and when we come back, we'll maybe take a look at another list just briefly and maybe touch about it more on our next episode. The next song we're going to listen to is a song written by a British American rock band. And it was written that comparing the seven wonders of the world would not compare to the beauty of a romance. It was released on June 29th, 1987 by Warner's Bro Records. What song is this? This song is Fleetwood Mac, Seven Wonders, here on CILU 102.7 FM. Welcome back, you're listening to CILU 102.7 FM. That was Fleetwood Mac with Seven Wonders. Before we go today, we are going to cover a few of the less well-known and maybe less interesting lists of the Seven Wonders. And then maybe next episode, we'll look at the actual Seven Wonders and go into depth on all of them. So, without further ado, let's get back into the trivia. First list we're going to look at is the American Society of Civil Engineers' Seven Wonders of the Modern World, which pays tribute to the greatest civil engineering achievements of the 20th century. So, this list has seven wonders. Let's see if you can name all of them. Give you a second to think. Well, turns out that the first is the Channel Tunnel, CN Tower, the Empire State Building, the Golden Gate Bridge, the Itaipu Dam, the Delta and Zwinderzee Works, and the Panama Canal. The Channel Tunnel, also called the Channel, was started in 1987 and finished in 1994. It's the longest undersea portion of any tunnel in the world. The next is the CN Tower, started in 1973, finished in 1976. Was the tallest freestanding structure in the world from 1976 to 2007. The next is the Empire State Building, which started construction in 1930 and ended in 1931. Was the tallest structure in the world from 1931 to 1954. And the tallest freestanding structure in the world from 1931 to 1967. Tallest building in the world from 1931 to 1970. And first building with 100 plus stories. The next is the Golden Gate Bridge, which started in 1933 and finished in 1937. It's the longest suspension bridge main span in the world, from 1937 to 1964. The Itaipu Dam was started in 1970 and finished in 1984. On the Paraná River between Brazil and Paraguay. It's the largest operating hydroelectric facility in the world in terms of annual energy generation. The next is the Delta and Zwinderzee Works, which started in 1920 and finished in 1997, which was in the Netherlands. It's the largest hydraulic engineering project undertaken by the Netherlands during the 20th century. And the last is the Panama Canal, which started in 1880 and finished in 1914. It's one of the largest and most difficult engineering projects ever undertaken. That about does it for that list. Hopefully next week we will cover a list more about the actual seven wonders of the world when you think of them. We're going to play one song and then that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for tuning in. See you next week on It's Pretty Trivial here on CILU 102.7 FM. To finish off this week's episode, I want to play a song by the Tragically Hip that it's not exactly explaining the injustices going on right now, but it talks about one of the worst wrongdoings of the Canadian justice system ever with a wrongfully convicted man in Saskatchewan. And I think it kind of sums up how much there needs to be reform in the police systems and our court system. So we're going to play Wheat Kings to finish the episode here on CILU 102.7 FM.
Sundown in the Paris of the prairie, wheat kings of all treasures buried, and all you hear are the rusty breezes pushing around the weather vane Jesus. simple adoration sees the killer's fate. Maybe it's someone standing in a killer's place. 20 years for nothing, well, that's nothing new besides. No one's interested in something you didn't do. We kings and pretty things. Let's just see what the morning brings. There's a dream he dreams where the high school's dead and starved. It's a museum and we're all locked up in it. After dark, the walls are lined all yellow, gray, and sinister. Hung with pictures of our parents, prime ministers. We kings and pretty things. Wait and see. Late-breaking story on the CBC. A nation whispers we always knew that he'd go free. They add you can't be fond of living in the past. 'Cause if you are, then there's no way that you're gonna last. We and pretty things. Let's just see what tomorrow brings. We kings and pretty things. Oh, that's what tomorrow brings.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
CILU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
The Thunder Bay Country Market, keeping it local every Saturday from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. and every Wednesday from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. year-round. Stop by and say hi to over 80 vendors who make it, bake it, and grow it in the Dove Building located on the CLE grounds. Sensia Corporate Web Solutions. Log on to sensia.ca for information about locally owned and operated hosting, site creation, and more. The Study Coffee House. The Study is a fully licensed, intimate live venue and the place to get your caffeine fix while on the Lakehead University campus.
CILU now presents Indie Beat. Thanks for joining me for Indie Beat. I'm May Wandinger. Northern Royals is a five-piece alternative rock band from Winnipeg who shared a stage with bands like Royal Tusk and Jet Set Satellite. They'll soon be releasing their self-titled EP, which was produced by Garth Richardson. I'll be featuring Northern Royals in half an hour. First, here's Attica Riots with I'm Not the Only One.
I'm not the